Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of FYI. I'm Nicholas Gruss. I'm an associate portfolio manager here at ARK. And today I'm joined by two co-hosts, Angie Dalton, an advisor to ARK and CEO and founder of Signum Growth, and ARK's very own Andrew Kim. Our guest today is Joe Ferens, is the CEO and founder at GameFam, the leading metaverse media company for Gen Z and alpha communities. Joe, can you give us a bit more on your background and tell us a bit more on what GameFam is doing?
Yes. Thank you for having me on the podcast. So my background is I've been working in the pop culture and gaming space for my entire career, so a little over 20 years now. I started my career as a graphic designer on sports licensed t-shirts and posters. I went back to business school, interned at Disney, postgraduate internship at Nintendo, 2 years at Ubisoft, 3 years at Mattel, and I've been in the startup world for almost 10 years now. So after leaving Mattel, where I was full-time, I went to work on a Star Wars kids game, and then I worked on Subway Surfers, which is the world's most downloaded mobile game of all time, according to them, for a year as a consultant. And then I went back to Mattel and was consulting on Hot Wheels video games, which, believe it or not, at the time had very little going on. And over 5 years, we put Hot Wheels into 20 games, including two Microsoft Forza expansion packs, EA's Need for Speed, Epic's Rocket League franchise. And it was during those years that I became aware of what we now call the metaverse. We used to call it UGC gaming, but the metaverse sounds a lot cooler. So I'm glad that's what we call it now. And I started tracking the platform Roblox actually back in 2016 as a trend that I found interesting through some of the consulting work that I was doing at Mattel. And as Roblox took off and I was at a place in my career where I wanted to try starting my own video game company based on the work I'd been doing in the startup world, I said, I think this is going to be the next big video game platform, and it's going to need professional caliber publishing support, right? So professionalized approach to live services. What content is coming out next? How are we monetizing that content? How are we training staff and building long-term careers in this space, and how are we working with brands in this space, both from an IP perspective and from an advertising and media perspective? We started the company knowing that we were going to generate a huge amount of media traffic. You know, we had 25 players in our first game. I just checked our dashboards before our call. It's a Monday morning here. We have 110,000 players in our games across Roblox and Fortnite right now. We felt very confident that these 3D worlds were going to become a place where brands would be able to very effectively and seamlessly integrate. And we started building an ad tech platform years ago to accommodate that. And so where we find ourselves now is we are kind of the leading company, both in terms of professionalized approach to the ecosystem, in terms of the scale that we've generated, in terms of the IP games that we've released. Three of the top 10 all-time brand games come from GameFam on Roblox. Three of the top five all-time concerts, official Roblox virtual concerts come from GameFam. And we have sold in the most advertising probably of any company on the platform. So we're really at that intersection of the IP and the brand world and this emerging metaverse space that is where Gen Z and Gen Alpha are chilling all day. That's the role that we're playing, and that's the mission that we're on here at the company.
Amazing. And you've worked in, you know, various different roles and categories within gaming. What are some lessons you've learned and have tried to apply to the Roblox ecosystem from your prior work in, you know, mobile or AAA, or what you've observed just working with brands? What do you think is working well within Roblox, and how do you see this kind of shaping the future for this UGC platform?
So I think that when I look at our core competencies as a company, they were developed before we started the company, right? From the kind of veteran leadership cohort here at the company of myself, our chief business officer, our VPs, our directors, right? Everyone here has a gaming, media, or global IP background or a combination of those, like myself. So I think we developed our core competencies in parallel as this segment, this metaverse segment, has kind of exploded over the past few years, but they're all based on things that we've been doing for years, or for some of us even decades, before starting and joining the company. And those things are, one, live operations, right? So live services. These games, as I think anyone who tracks the industry knows, whether you're talking about Candy Crush or the new, you know, super hit Royal Match, or Pokemon Go, or Rocket League, or even Madden now, these games are live services. They're always on entertainment platforms. And that requires a totally different discipline in terms of product development and tech and creative than traditional, you know, boxed or, you know, pay to download video games have. So we're very strong at that live services layer. And that means that we're shipping content across 10 games every week. And that content also comes along with the marketing and the measurement, right? So we call it like plan, promote, analyze. That's our live services core competency that we've been doing. Some of our games, like Twilight Daycare, which just crossed the 2 billion visits threshold, has over 10,000 people playing it right now. That game is going to turn 3 years old in the next month. So that's a game that's been running ongoing for 3 years with millions of users every day, every week, every month. So that's number one, live services. Number two is production, original productions. As I said, three of the top 10 branded games of all time, Sonic number one, Barbie number six, Hot Wheels number 10, were developed out of our own studios here at GameFam. Three of the top five rated user concerts, including number one, the Sweetie Super Bowl concert, which just won a Clio. This was a collaboration between Warner Music Group, the NFL, and a title sponsor, and we'll talk more about that, Intuit, and GameFam's internal studios developed that product. It's the number one user rated concert of all time on Roblox. Won a Clio, is nominated for 2 Webbies right now. So we produce the absolute best work in the field consistently, from a production values, playability, charm factor, polish. And that's something that global brands and global IPs need to be relevant in the space. So our third competency flows right from that, which is brand partnerships. We know how to work with the very best global IPs in the world, whether that's Sonic, Barbie. We have a game based on My Hero Academia, which is one of the world's most popular and important animes right now, which makes it one of the world's most popular and important IPs, period, in today's global entertainment economy. We know how to develop. We know how to run through approvals. We know how to onboard these partners into this new medium and get them to understand it. And then on the other side, we know how to bring in sponsors, right? So I mentioned Intuit was the title sponsor of our Sweetie Super Bowl concert that's won so many awards. We have built an advertising network and a suite of advertising products that we are outselling to global brands all day. And the demand to be on Roblox and to be on Fortnite for these brands is huge. Gen Z gamers are spending on average 130 minutes per day on Roblox. That's more than TikTok, which I believe is 112 or so. That's more than YouTube. It's, you know, far more than Netflix or any of these other platforms. So gaming is where today's most relevant and vital consumer demographics are spending their time. So of course, if you're a brand and you want to maintain maximum relevancy, you want to build engagement, you need to be on these platforms. So while a lot of agencies have popped up over the last few years, say, hey, we'll make you a game. We'll make you a game for your fashion brand. These brands, they don't do well with standalone games. We've built a network where we can deliver campaigns. And I can give you, you know, more examples as we go, but it's been a humongous business for us and one that we planned from the outset and we're now executing.
I think it is interesting, your point on the live ops front, right? In that the UGC platforms are encouraging, I guess, developers to push out like MVPs, right? And then see what's working. And then you will push out additional content as time goes on the experiences that are working for you, right? And you're seeing that across the board, across different entertainment formats, like even like music artists on TikTok, they're posting like a 30-second clip, a preview of what they're singing. And then if it goes viral, then they produce the whole thing. And I'd love to get your sense of, like, do you think all gaming will kind of go in that direction going forward? And like, how much more productive has that made your team, right? Because you are able to iterate so quickly.
So I think all digital product is moving in that direction. One example, you know, not from within GameFam that I find really interesting is Scopely's Monopoly Go game, which I, according to what I've heard in the, you know, gaming media, has generated $2 billion in revenue in its first year. But I also heard that game was in a beta soft launch for 3 years while they tuned metrics and used live consumer feedback to improve the product. And I think whether you're making a website or a video game or even, you know, film content, like that idea of, is it going to engage? The attention economy that has been birthed by, in my opinion, a combination of TikTok and Roblox is just so demanding. There's no room for things that don't immediately delight and entertain audiences. And so for us, we are, when we're launching original games, like for example, Sonic, we had that game in a soft launch for, you know, a month. And during that time, we were able to improve metrics significantly, leading to the biggest launch in Roblox history at the time. And that's an organic launch, right? We got up to 275,000 concurrent users just in Sonic alone in its first week. That was, you can't buy that on Roblox. That actually comes from the algorithm recognizing superior KPIs to the platform's benchmarks. So we did that with Barbie as well. And it worked amazingly in Barbie. Barbie, you know, peaked at 65,000 concurrent users. It's got, you know, probably 7,000 people playing it right now, 6 months after it came out. So that process works. And then on a week by week basis, we are measuring every new update we ship. And when we find a best practice, for example, on SpongeBob, we hit an all-time high in revenue per user just this last weekend. When I say all-time high, I mean portfolio, historical, all-time non-holiday high in revenue per daily active user. Well, I know what we did to get it. It was a new tactic, and we are now going to roll that out across the whole portfolio. So I think the portfolio approach when it comes to growth, we've had 4 years of ongoing growth at the company in what I would consider probably the most competitive consumer market in the world. We have been able to consistently raise revenue per user, and we're consistently monetizing through advertising more and more. And the reason why is because we built a portfolio. And the reason we built a portfolio is because we knew that there was strength in numbers on these user-generated metaverse content platforms.
It's pretty interesting to see how many times you've been a pioneer in this kind of experimentation, as you referenced. I want to go back to Twilight Daycare because you also were a pioneer in doing scripted comedy with the animation studio. I think, was it called Wind Sun Sky animation?
That's it, Wind Sun Sky.
And I'd love to ask you about that because you referenced the $2 billion. Do you think that the scripted comedy drove that, or was it, did you do the scripted show after you saw the engagement? And do you see that as kind of a future for GameFam entering scripted?
Yeah, I mean, Wind Sun Sky is a phenomenal studio and they are extremely focused on figuring out what's the next wave of entertainment coming. And so obviously we're living in the midst of the streaming era and the streaming wars, right, across media right now. And what comes after that? Where are things going? Where is their blue oceans? And I think Wind Sun Sky has identified that IP that is born out of Roblox and other metaverse platforms could be the next wave of super IPs. And we agree. We've always thought this as well. So what happened was, you know, Twilight Daycare, the history of that franchise is really interesting. It was made by a individual and it came out, and as it happens every day on Roblox, out of nowhere, it found this huge audience because it brought something totally new and unexpected, which is when you have user-generated content, that's what happens, right? You know, those of us at bigger companies, the GameFams, you know, and of course, if you go up the next scale, the, you know, the major global publishers, they want to focus on things that always have a history, a track record of working and of scaling from a genre and creativity perspective. But individual creators around the world, they're not worried about that. They just want to make something that they think is going to be fulfilling for them to make. And if it makes money, great. And if it doesn't make money, they had a great time making it, right? They're working from pure passion. So that's where Twilight came from. And as soon as it came out, we connected with the creator and he had this huge hit on his hands. And he was really a thoughtful guy. And he said, you know, I don't know what to do from here. And we said, well, that's great because we do. That's kind of our thesis for why we started the company, right? Is that there's going to be games that pop off and we're going to be able to manage the live operations layer of that game better than someone who's never done or heard of live operations before, which I think is a pretty reasonable thesis and has proven to be true. So we started working with the creator on it, and the game grew and grew and became a top ongoing top 25, top 50 game on Roblox, as I said, for going on 3 years now. And Wind Sun Sky, we were introduced to them through our partners at Creative Artists Agency. And they said, you know, do you have any IPs you think would be a good show? And I said, I think Twilight Daycare makes a lot of sense. It's a world that you can set stories in. And we worked with Roblox to premiere each episode in the game itself. So we built a movie theater in the game. We premiere the episodes in the game. They get hundreds of thousands of full completions every time we do it. Players rush in to check out the new content. We got a toy line from another partner based on this as well that's had global distribution for the past few years. So this is exactly, I think, what the dream of these platforms has been, that an individual person can make something special and then working with other people can turn that into a long-term value creation engine. And that's exactly the story of Twilight Daycare.
It is fascinating to hear that story. I want to take a step back and just talk about the landscape more broadly. We've touched on Roblox. There is another very large platform pushing aggressively into UGC, namely being Fortnite. I'm curious your thoughts, if you can help us understand the differences, the similarities, what you think will transpire in the space as you have more competition, and how GameFam is approaching that.
So Fortnite has been a really exciting new growth opportunity for the company. A lot of our internal developer teams they play a lot of Roblox, and I think unsurprisingly, they also play a lot of Fortnite. We're talking about, you know, a lot of Gen Z aged people here. And these are the two biggest games for that cohort, or, you know, the two biggest platforms, right? I mean, Fortnite started as a game and now it's a platform. Roblox has always been a platform. And so we started experimenting with some Fortnite content a couple of years ago. Now we brought in someone who was very experienced creating Fortnite content and started to let a few of our developers work on some innovation projects around it. And we've had two pretty substantial hits on Fortnite so far. One was called Dead Pines, and it was a zombie survival game when the zombies were released into the Fortnite ecosystem as a piece of tech from Epic. Oh, now we can use zombies, right? And they had some prefabricated tech that made them, you know, attack players, and they're great. We built a game around that called Dead Pines, and it got into the, you know, top five most engaging games on Epic's feature placements, and it lasted for months and generated, you know, a substantial amount of income for the company, actually. And we sold the first ever ad campaign in a Fortnite game into Dead Pines for an A24 movie called Talk to Me. It's like a horror movie, wants to reach Gen Z audience. We've got a game with kind of a, you know, horror monster theme. These things were, you know, a total slam dunk, and we got over, you know, a million engagements during that campaign. And this is, you know, for, you know, extra long lean-in engagements, we were able to measure player sentiment afterwards. And there was an 86% increase in, you know, players who were going to tell their friends about Talk to Me as a movie. So this was a great campaign. And then we also have a game right now called Abby, but on a Bike HD. So it's a weird name, I know. It basically, it's a motorcycle platformer. You ride a motorcycle and you go up ramps and you try to get to the end of your motorcycle course. Okay, so this game, we built it when the motorcycles were released. So Fortnite released the motorcycles into the editor tool. And we said, okay, well, there's, you know, some, you know, games similar to this on Roblox. Why don't we try making one on Fortnite and be one of the first people to use the motorcycles in a creative way? And this game has been a huge hit for us as well. We had, you know, it, last week, all week long, it was number one in driving and either number one or number two in the platformer discovery sorts on Epic's Fortnite homepage. So, you know, it has thousands of concurrent players playing it throughout the day. And it was in the top 25 to top 50 games on Fortnite, you know, for the last few weeks. And so we have a roadmap now for that game. Advertisers love this game because it's not shooting, right? And shooting games are great. We have nothing against shooting games at GameFam, but for some advertisers, shooting games aren't the right fit for their brand. So, for example, there's a, you know, animated theatrical brand we've been talking to that thinks, you know, Abby But on a Bike HD on Fortnite is the perfect place to reach the audience that they're trying to promote their film to. So we're talking to them about bringing them into another ad campaign on Fortnite. So continuing to try to break new ground all the time here.
Joe, I'm curious, without revealing any of GameFam's secret sauce, are there similarities and learnings and lessons from Roblox that you've brought over to Fortnite, and certain tactics and user preferences that translate from Roblox to Fortnite?
Generally, yes. And specifically, probably not yet. Generally, I think that, you know, that TikTok, Roblox, Fortnite mindset towards content creation, that's a soft discipline that we have in our production org. And that is why we've been able to develop two successful Fortnite games, because of that production discipline of understanding what players on these platforms are looking for, right? And it's very different than, you know, if you take a game I have very high regard for, like God of War, for example, from, you know, Santa Monica Studios. Like, that game would blow everyone's mind when it came out on a Roblox or a Fortnite, because everyone's like, oh my God, look at these cutscenes, look at these production values. And a week later, it would have no players, because that's not what players want currently on these platforms. They want a very different vibe you know, I always say it's like you could put Saturday Night Live on after SportsCenter and no one would watch Saturday Night Live because people aren't watching, coming to ESPN to watch sketch comedy. Even if it's the best sketch comedy out there, no one's coming to ESPN to watch it. They're going to be like, what the heck is this? And turn the channel. So there's a vibe on these platforms. We are experts in that vibe and that translates. But on a tactical basis, Fortnite just doesn't have, there's so much functionality. There's so many things we do on Roblox that are so important for maintaining a competitive edge in the algorithm, right? And those things just don't exist on Fortnite. We can't even measure individual player data. Like, we can't see how many players complete XYZ quest or anything like that yet on Fortnite. So there's a lot more intuition necessary right now on Fortnite, and Roblox is currently a lot more data driven.
Do you think that the payout structures over time will evolve? I mean, we saw Disney, we saw Lego. It sounds like for creators, at least, there are going to be more ways potentially to monetize by doing, you know, licensing deals. You have a background in all of this. You worked at Disney. What do you think about how these might diverge, or will they kind of travel in the same path?
Well, I think that right now the payout systems on both platforms are still in their very early days. And the information is pretty publicly available. If you look at the top earning games on both platforms, you would see that the revenue would not be very meaningful to a corporate IP entity, which is why we are continuing to guide our brand and IP partners towards looking at these platforms first and foremost as extremely important relevancy statements. And secondarily, emerging revenue opportunities. And I think that what Disney and Lego are doing is really smart, where they're saying, hey, we're not necessarily going to depend on one game the way they would in other platforms to be their revenue, you know, engine. They're going to look at building kind of a overlay where users can use those assets in a brand safe way. And then how they negotiate that with Epic, though, in terms of the payouts there, I have no current insight into that. But it will be great from a volume standpoint. If you look at Lego on Fortnite right now, I mean, there's already tons of Lego games. There's tons more coming. And the Lego Fortnite flagship product is a masterpiece and you know, one of the top five most used experiences on Fortnite all day, every day. So that's been a huge win, I think, for Lego, for the Lego company, the Lego group. Yeah.
Joe, what are some of the misunderstandings brands still have about the space? You're working with them. You're in the trenches here. What exactly do they still not understand about the power of UGC platforms like Roblox and Fortnite?
I think that the biggest misunderstanding right now, and this is pretty, like, if you were to do like a kind of like Family Feud style list of the misunderstandings here, this one would be number one by a wide margin, is that every brand thinks it should have its own Roblox and Fortnite game. And that we say, look, every brand needs a Roblox strategy. Hardly any brands need their own Roblox standalone game. You can see every brand-based game ever published on Roblox that we are aware of as a company, and we track this very closely on a website called RoMonitor, R-O Monitor. It has the list of the top 10 branded games of all time, and you can deep dive there. There have been over 300 branded games released on Roblox. Hardly any of them have gotten any traction. What we are advising brand partners to do is to take that same budget and come work with us to deploy that against clear and achievable engagement, relevancy, and campaign goals. And let me give you an example just recently. We just finished wrapping up, what is the number one brand engagement program of all time on Roblox for Paramount and the Super Bowl? So Paramount Plus and Paramount have the Super Bowl rights. They want to promote that to the Roblox audience and generate awareness. We ran a campaign for a month across 6 games on Roblox where players did a quest in each game. And then if they completed all quests in the game, there was a grand prize for the meta completion of the 6 quests. And this generated in 1 month, 75 million visits, 1 billion minutes spent, and 350 million validated brand engagements. Now, that would make it that 75 million visits during that month across 6 games in the GameFan portfolio, that would make it the number 10 branded game of all time on Roblox in users out of 300 games, right? So that same budget deployed into a standalone game would likely have reached a fraction of those users. And even worse than that, or even more concerning, potentially almost nobody, you know? And as I said, go look at the numbers. You know, you'll see people on LinkedIn after 6 months, they're saying, oh, we just hit 4 million visits to our Roblox game after 6 months. And we're saying, sure, that's great. Is that how you want to deploy your budget? Or we can make sure that you're going to get tens of millions of meaningful engagements in high quality content on a schedule of your choosing. And that's the kind of the story that we're out there trying to share at South by Southwest, at the Playfronts, advertising sales, at Brand Week events, and, you know, essentially, you know, anywhere where advertisers are, we're there trying to explain this to them. It's a lot like the App Store was in, you know, 10, 12 years ago, where every brand, every campaign thought they needed their own app for every part of their brand. And of course, that's not what consumers are looking for. You need a compelling value proposition.
I think initially, I would assume that the split between standalone experiences versus limited campaigns would be kind of well split between, say, media and entertainment IP versus non-M&E. But it seems like even within M&E, you would advise brands to pick one strategy over the other. Can you kind of talk through like what you're thinking about in terms of, like what are the traits that IP holders must have in order to survive as a standalone?
Well, let's talk about realistic goals for a second. You know, in terms of scaled engagement, there is a place for standalone games based on IPs, and that you can generate tens of millions of, you know, meaningful brand experiences weekly, like we are across Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, SpongeBob, Barbie. But when you hear the names of those brands, you probably recognize them first and foremost as beloved IP franchises. You know, or when you think about Sonic the Hedgehog, or you think about My Hero Academia, which is currently, it's had 2 events in Fortnite, right? It's one of the most in-demand IPs in the world right now. So the first thing is, in my opinion, to be successful on these platforms, you need humongous, just intrinsic consumer demand for entertainment experiences based in these worlds. This shouldn't sound all that revolutionary. And I think a really easy way to think about it to start, that we usually, you know, is kind of our standard framework, is if your brand or IP could support a standalone mobile free-to-play game in the App Store and get organic discovery there, people are going to search for it and want to play it. If it could stand on the Xbox storefront as a game that people might pay $10, $30, $50, $70 to download, then yeah, you should be thinking about, is there a strategy to make a standalone Roblox or Fortnite game? And if not, why? What is the business case for that. And, you know, I think people, when they hear that, it makes sense and they're able to shift their POV into a more strategic point of view, or a more strategic mindset, which is, what can I get from these platforms? I know we need to be here. I know these are really important. And what are goals that we could achieve? And people, you know, we can refer them to Row Monitor where they can see the data, right? It's out there. It's public. And I love that. And I love that we have built that and that we are tracking that and adding to it every week as more and more branded experiences land from these smaller agencies and brands that want to experiment. So once you've validated though, okay, yes, we could support SpongeBob. SpongeBob has supported many successful mobile and console games. Okay. Then what is the business strategy for Roblox? Because when the number, you know, if you're not a top 10 game on the Roblox platform, your game as a product is netting less than $10 million a year in revenue to the project, right? And that is a lot of money to a small startup like GameFam right now, but that's not a ton of money to a global IP company like Sega that has yearly revenue in the billions of dollars, right? So what are we looking to achieve, right? So one, self-sustaining relevancy, right? That continues to keep these IPs front and center, owning the conversation, right? Because if IP owners don't take control of their IPs on these platforms, bootleg developers will do it for them. And three, learning and experimentation for things that can either grow as the segment grows or can eventually evolve into other pieces of the franchise. So there's a ton to be gained here. And we are, very selective. We were much more experimental earlier in the company. We're now very selective in terms of what IPs we will invest in or co-develop or license, because it needs to make sense for everyone. And we now know 4 years, 5 years into this business at GameFam now, we just had our 5-year anniversary. Took us a while. Got to move down the learning curve. But now we know, and now we can share that.
Joe, I want to kind of flip this conversation on its head a bit and talk about Roblox native IP. I think we're so early in the story of UGC, and this is really just starting to come along as this is going to be a major market. But you mentioned, and you gave an example of Twilight Daycare having its own toy line, its own show. How long do you think until we see these Roblox native brands extend beyond, like fully beyond these UGC platforms with their own movies, TV shows that reach global audiences? Because there's a lot of nostalgia building up in the space, right? You mentioned the hours played in some of these experiences are in the billions, hundreds of millions. All of that is, goodwill to create beyond the Roblox ecosystem, because that's not where all of the attention of the users ends up being over the course of a day. And they would want to see those Roblox native experiences in, maybe a TV show or a movie. I'm watching the Fallout show on Amazon right now. That's gaming IP. I think gaming IP is having a moment in general. We've had blockbuster hits with Super Mario Brothers happening year after year. How long until you...
Sonic.
Yeah, Sonic, exactly. Yeah. How long until you think it reverses and now you have Roblox IP extending beyond the platform?
I just watched The Last of Us as well, and it was fantastic and, just a huge hit, right? And I think there's the Halo show on Paramount Plus, and so there's so much happening in terms of taking video game IP into more narrative-based mediums. And that's something that is so exciting. And we've only been waiting for it to really come to fruition for like 40 years now, right? As an industry, but it's happening, right? Like we've kind of hit that moment, right? The singularity has been occurring over the last few years where we've seen multiple franchises make the leap extremely successfully, where there'd been attempts at it, right? For many years, the Five Nights at Freddy's movie actually, you know, was another great example of that. And I think from Roblox, I think we are going to see Roblox IP jump off of Roblox. And I'd like to think it will land very successfully the first time out. But I also think that it's possible it'll take a few attempts to get it right, because the Roblox IPs are actually quite different than a lot of the video game IPs that have been made into, you know, film and TV properties. I think with Twilight Daycare, we did something really innovative. We shot the whole thing inside of the Roblox game. That was a really kind of edgy move. But I think Twilight Daycare eventually can and should have a fully rendered, you know, series on Netflix or on YouTube Kids or on something like that. I think there's, you know, and when I look at the IP landscape on Roblox, the question is like, what's the lift? You know, how big is the lift to take an IP and make it into a story? With Last of Us or even Fallout, those are truly narrative-based games. And I think on Roblox, this is not super relevant to Game Fam right now. We're not in this genre, but horror is by far the most character-driven segment on the Roblox platform. And when you step outside of horror, the character and story orientation start to get pretty diffuse. And so I think that we will see some happen very quickly. I think horror is very adaptable. And if anyone's listening and they want help navigating the space, give us a call. We know everyone. We know all the IPs, and we know how content is made. And we know how content is made well and how content is made badly. So we'll help get you there. But I think outside of horror, it's going to be interesting to see what IPs are adaptable into narrative right now. And I think over the next few years, as the Roblox production values and the sophistication of the games continues to grow, I think that opportunity is going to get a lot bigger to find adaptable IP.
Yeah. And Minecraft is getting its own, and that's a platform, right? It's getting its own movie, I think, with Jack Black and a few other mega stars in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many examples.
Yeah. And Minecraft is an interesting IP, and we have some Minecraft business at the company that we love Minecraft, and it's just not quite a platform, really. I mean, it is a platform, but it's not quite a developer platform where developers can grow sustainable businesses on it, although there is good business to be done on Minecraft, you know, in certain ways. But it's not built for studios to develop full businesses on it the way Fortnite and Roblox are right now. But my point is that, you know, Minecraft has this really ownable aesthetic, right? And it's got this kind of inherent storyline of survival and the creepers and the Ender Dragon. And, you know, can you make it to, you know, can you navigate the Minecraft universe to defeat the Ender Dragon and whatever, save the world of Minecraft, I guess. It's kind of an emergent story, as we like to say, but there is something very ownable there. And it'll be really interesting to see what they do. And if you're going to do anything, Jack Black is the guy to do it with. That guy's a freaking legend. And I've been a fan since High Fidelity and Tenacious D, and he's awesome.
Joe, some crazy serendipity here. You said if anybody wants to talk about horror. So this is literally last week talking to the agent asking me about whether or not she should get into video games. And I was like, Hereditary.
Yeah.
That's horror. Like, that could work. So now I know who to call. Yeah. I kind of forgot about it. I'm going to call you after the show. But absolutely. If you think about what one of the things that Nick said prompted the idea of kind of the Mr. Beast moment in YouTube, you know, will we see that? I could see it in Fortnite easier because it feels like it's not as defined yet. Do you think we'll see it in Roblox and do you even think we'll see it in Fortnite? Kind of a strong character like that.
Yeah, I do. I think we'll see it. I think we'll see it in both. I think that where Roblox has had some great kind of moments, you know, like Piggy, kind of like a Peppa Pig on, you know, like through the looking glass situation, that was a huge franchise on Roblox and it's still very popular. Made by one guy who I believe is in his late teens or early 20s, you know, and so there's the spark of something great, but right, nurturing that into it becoming a cohesive fictional universe and a franchise. I think we haven't quite seen that yet. You know, there's another one, Rainbow Friends, that I think is great. And same, you know, same thing, right? So, you know, very young solo creator. I think we, you know, are constantly in talks with creators, and we would love to, you know, partner with one of them to help them figure that out, because it does need to pop off of Roblox. But to do that, it needs to first maintain relevancy on Roblox as a top game. And to do that, you need to have a live operations mindset. And so that's something, right? So the pieces are still kind of coming together there. If you look at Minecraft, live operated by Microsoft, right? They're constantly updating. They're constantly tinkering with it. If you look at Fortnite, flagship Fortnite, they're running new seasons, what, every, like, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, with multiple chapters in each season, with this ridiculous amount of rewards to earn, with storylines that come in and out of third-party global IPs and characters. So when the Roblox creator community starts to run their franchises like that, they'll start to increase the opportunity size to become a player in the global community. You know, sometimes I remind Roblox devs, you know, I'm like, listen, guys, Roblox is huge, and Roblox is the future, but Roblox is still the number six earning mobile game in the world, right? Royal Match, Candy Crush, PUBG Mobile earn more than the entire Roblox platform does in the App Store. So we still have a ways to go, I think, to grow Roblox to a place where it can, you know, if the whole platform has, you know, similar earnings to one mobile game, I think that speaks to getting those IPs. We need to scale them up further. But as Roblox grows and continues to grow in users, as the revenue per user grows, as the sophistication of the games grows, you know, it's kind of an inevitability in that regard.
One thing I wanted to bring up, when you mentioned horror and survival as genres that kind of encourage narrative building, it seems like a lot of it has to do with the developers being able to outsource the building of that lore to its fan base, right? I think with Five Nights at Freddy's, it was also a group of really intense people kind of building out conspiracy theories that shaped the movie. And this is kind of a maybe far-fetched pivot, but I'm just wondering if you could see that type of incentivizing to build lore on the end users can like permeate through multiple genres with generative AI, in that you can like seed with language models, maybe like a set of narratives right around your game, and it can kind of like boost the contemplation process across the user base. And I don't know, or do you always need that sense of like mystery that's like so present in those two genres to kind of get people to talk in the first place?
Well, I think that we're it's very interesting. I haven't thought about this, so I am enjoying the intellectual exercise here. But I think that generative AI could have a huge role to play in building out the official fictional universes. For example, like if we had a IP here that we needed to build out the fictional universe for, you know, I've been playing with ChatGPT for a lot, and I just consistently am floored by what this thing can do. I would have it just brainstorm a lot of different ideas, and then I would start to comb through those ideas and find the ones that I thought as a creator really popped off, that really excited me. And that can start to build out lore a lot quicker. I think that a lot of video game developers, I mean, historically, right, until I think, you know, Naughty Dog and Sony Santa Monica and some of the indie games, some of the stuff out of Annapurna, the leap forward we've taken as an art form in storytelling has been recent, and it's been huge. But historically speaking, I believe games generally start with something you can kind of hold in your hand, and that feels fun on a tactile and interactive basis. And then developers kind of chase that, and they serve that, right? So if it feels good to shoot, okay, what are things we can shoot at? And that's not how storytelling in the narrative mediums works, right? That it's almost the opposite, right? Where you've got to have the story first. The shooting needs to serve the story. Nobody's going to care what an action hero is shooting at if they don't first care about that action hero and their motivation and their arc. And so I think that a lot of indie creators don't have a strong training in the storytelling arts, and that generative AI can really help them a lot and help them build their worlds out and help them understand what is possible in their fictional universes. And that's really exciting. And I'm hearing a lot of stuff in the storytelling industry where generative AI is going to play a role. And I think it's really a really innovative space.
Yeah, and I guess we focused on generative AI's implications on storytelling, but I guess even on the end user experience, I know at GDC, people were talking about experimenting with plugging in language models into their Roblox experiences. And I mean, you're seeing those crazy engagement rates on character AI as well. I'm just wondering how you guys are thinking about kind of intelligent NPCs in your games and if that presents a cool opportunity. Sorry, this is another tangent, but I've been telling Nick the whole time, I just think a Love Island experience on Roblox would be amazing from like a micro transaction monetization perspective, and just like having NPCs.
Which is the one where they're like, that's too hot. Is that too hot to handle?
I don't know, but it's like all the same thing, right? In that like you're interacting with some hot NPC and you're trying to woo them or something, you know, with your nice clothes and nice accessories.
I watched one of those shows. I don't think I stuck with it. It was like a group of singles and then they get on the island and then they find out that they can't actually date each other. And can they resist dating each other was the show. It was all right. Good premise. So I think that reading and chatting with NPCs is going to generate some humongous opportunities in the mobile free-to-play space. Holding your phone in portrait mode, tapping with two thumbs, having ongoing story-based relationships with NPCs. If we've seen the movie Her, you know, with Joaquin Phoenix, right? That's already happening, right? That's been happening, from my understanding, in Asia for a long time, and it's starting to happen in the West. I'm not sure. I mean, my point is that there's a place for it, but it has to be in specific games where players want to just chat, you know? And I think that most gamers don't want to just chat. And so I think it needs to be very tightly targeted towards very specific audiences and very smartly monetized. If you look at Episodes and Choices, which have been two huge mobile games that are mostly story-based, I think that those type of games will continue to thrive and generative AI will be a superpower for that genre. On Roblox, someone's going to have a hit with a generative AI-based game for sure. I don't know how big of a genre chatting with NPCs is going to be on Roblox. And because most players are playing on their phone and the ergonomics are a little challenging. You've got to like pull up the chat window and then you've got to chat and you got to close the chat window, keep moving around the 3D space. And that's why I'm a little not as bullish on it on Roblox.
Aren't you neglecting voice?
Yeah. Yeah, but then that's true. I mean, generative voice chat. I don't know when's that hitting the market. You know, like when are you going to have a satisfying voice based chat with an NPC? Because right now my phone still can't take dictation properly. So you tell me. You're probably more tuned in this than
I am. You have to check out Hume, Hume. I think it's like this emotional AI model that was publicized a couple of weeks ago. You'd be surprised, I think. It's kind of jarring.
I'll check it out. I mean, I think, interestingly, where I think generative AI, whether it's voice or text-based or behavioral, is I think making multiplayer worlds feel more alive more quickly for players. If you look at, I mean, everyone here who's played PUBG Mobile won their first game of PUBG Mobile, you know, because you were playing against bots right? So we can call it AI, we can call it NPCs, we can call it generative AI. Like, you know, bots have a huge role to play in a lot of games. And I think every game, you know, there's probably a way of bots can benefit the engagement layer of almost every game. And the question is just, what's the right execution of the bots? And can it be done efficiently within a live services infrastructure? Is the juice worth the squeeze for that feature? We have a game we've been incubating called Smack Stars. It's super fun. You run around with a giant glove on a stick and smack other players. It's a PvP game. And we're like, should we add, you know, generative, you know, AI into that game to help fill out some of the servers and stuff? And, but can we, do we have the tech skills to do that? Those are the kind of questions that we're, you know, wrestling with it when you're dealing with small teams that need to ship lots of content.
Mm-hmm. Joe, thank you so much for coming on, and what you and the GameFram team are contributing to the UG space is just absolutely incredible. We wanted to ask you one last question. What does GameFam look like in 5 years from now? What do these UGC platforms, Fortnite, Roblox, what do they look like?
I think that Fortnite and Roblox are going to continue to grow. I think they're going to continue to take market share from kind of everything that's not them in a lot of ways. I think, like, you know, YouTube, streaming, the Gen Z and Gen Alpha audiences, they're going to spend more and more time in Roblox and Fortnite. They might be eventually be co-viewing videos in those platforms. They might be having entire social lives outside of gaming in those platforms to a certain extent. And I think that the content is going to be incredible. I think on, you know, Fortnite has incredible high fidelity content. They need to expand the depth of features you can develop. That will happen. Roblox has unlimited depth of features. There's nothing you can't develop on Roblox right now, but they need to increase their fidelity. And both of those things are going to happen. I think we're going to see other platforms enter the space as well. If anyone's ever seen, you know, Build a Rocket Boys Everywhere platform that's in development, that's incredible. There's, you know, platform called Spatial that I think is really cool. So there's a lot happening in that space. And, you know, user-generated content is going to be a huge piece of every media business. And generative AI is going to be a huge accelerant in that. So, and GameFam, I mean, I'd like to think we have, you know, a suite of the top ongoing live services franchises, both original and third-party licensed IPs in the space, and that we are the developer and partner of choice for global brands who need to either develop product or reach audiences on these platforms. That's where our future is headed. That's why we're not a game developer, not a game publisher, but a gaming media company that is focused on Gen Z and Gen Alpha audiences. That's why we think of ourselves as something that couldn't have existed until now and will exist for decades to come. And we are the first, but there are already others trying. There will continue to be others joining into the segment. And it's exciting to be first, and currently, I think, to be the best as well. So thank you guys for your partnership in that regard.
Amazing. Thank you, Joe, Andrew, Angie. It was a pleasure. What a great conversation. We touched on so much. Thank you all.
So fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Nick. Hi, Andrew.
ARC believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from ARC. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions, and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.